Cutting Audio.
Cutting Audio presents James Axler's Deathlands. Narrated by Richard Rowan. With performances by Colleen Delaney, Nanette Savard, Terrence Aselford, and Thomas Penny. Deathlands 56, Sunchild. Ryan Carter opened his eye. A sharp, stabbing pain shot through his head, piercing to the back of his brain like a red-hot needle pushed through the center of that eye. No matter how many times he made the jump using the Matrans, no matter how often he steeled himself for the inevitable agonies of recovery and regaining consciousness, it still amazed him that it could hurt so much. He lost count of the number of times his scarred and pitted torso had been injured in combat, racked with pain from torture. Still, all of that seemed preferable right now to the agonies of regaining full consciousness after a jump. Ryan's muscled body, honed by years of travel and combat, trained to cope with a harsh existence, complained in no uncertain manner as he rose from his prone position onto one elbow. His curly black hair, matted with sweat, hung down over his active eye and the empty socket, protected by a patch and scored by a long, livid, and puckered scar. The lead in his muscles dissipated as the lactic acid dispersed, and the oxygen from the stale air he breathed so heavily started to traverse his bloodstream. He looked across to the seemingly slight but deceptively wiry frame of J.B. Dix, the man known as the Armorer, a position he had fulfilled for traitor and whom Ryan had first been able to call friend in a land where such things were rare. John Barrymore Dix was slumped across the frosted floor of the Matrans chamber, across the now silent discs that glowed when the chamber was about to activate. A faint tang of ozone remained in the brackish air, a sign that Ryan hadn't taken long to regain consciousness after the final stages of the jump. JB, on the other hand, was still out cold, his chest moving visibly as he tried to gulp in air. His precious and battered fedora lay beside him, along with his Smith & Wesson M4000 scattergun, his Uzi, and the technoknife that had been invaluable when the aging tech of the blasters had given trouble. Not that that often happened. The Armorer was an artist, if such a thing could be said to exist in the Deathlands. His eyes would sparkle behind his wire-rimmed spectacles, now safely stored in his pocket against the trauma of the jump, when he talked of weaponry, and his knowledge of blasters, grens, and any other weapon was second to none. He made sure that the group with whom he traveled kept its weaponry in excellent condition at all times, taking pride in his work. A pride that was far from idle, as a misfiring blaster in the middle of a firefight could mean buying the farm when survival was much the preferred option. Beside the prone JB, her hand reaching out to him protectively, was Dr. Mildred Wyeth. Sometimes cynical in the face of adversity, her phlegmatic attitude in some ways echoed that of the Armorer, and it led to their relationship and understanding deepening over their travels. Despite the horror of the post-apocalypse world into which she had been thrown, Mildred's pre-dark idealism still powered her onward. Trapped in cryogenic suspension following complications during a minor operation, Mildred had awakened into something that for her was a nightmare. Initially, she had clashed with Ryan Carter, questioning his right to assume leadership of the group. But Ryan's fighting skills and survival instincts had won her respect, as had his strong sense of justice, albeit tempered by necessary pragmatism. Besides which, she noticed that although assuming leadership and thus having the final say, Ryan believed strongly in teamwork and played to the strengths of his companions. Mildred's beaded plaits hung over her dark face, almost a pallid gray, as the waves of nausea from the jump dragged her toward consciousness. A low moan drew the one-eyed warrior's attention, causing him to turn slowly. As it came from the inside of the chamber, and was in a tone he knew well, he allowed himself the luxury of taking his time, allowing his still-complaining equilibrium to adjust to the movement of his head. If he hadn't recognized the sound, or if it had originated outside the chamber, he would have steeled himself, ignored the sudden dizziness and nausea, and reached for his panga and his 9mm 6-hour P226 blaster. This time there was no need. The moan emanated, as he knew it had to, from the bony and angular figure dressed in a frock coat who lay propped against the far wall of the chamber. Dr. Theophilus Tanner was, in real time, somewhere in his mid to late 30s. Yet his real age was incalculable, as he had been plucked from his own time into another, and then tossed back into the stream of time. Doc's muddled and bemused memories told of a time before the turn of the 20th century, when life was sedate and ordered. The unwilling and unwitting subject of an experiment by the white coat scientists of a time immediately prior to Skydark, Doc had proved too quarrelsome, too much trouble, and had been used as a test subject in an experiment to project forward in time. It was an irony that the experiment had probably saved his life, landing him as it did nearly a century after the devastation of the nuclear war, known as Skydark. However, the damage to his physical and mental states was a subject of speculation. Mildred often referred to him as a crazy old fool, but was the first to own up that this was merely irritation with his more unstable moments. The truth was that the Oxford and Harvard-educated Tanner had weathered experiences that would have broken a lesser man. He looked weather-beaten and aged. Strangers would